Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
6:14 now, Tuesday morning, June 17th in the year of our Lord, 18th. I don't know where we get 17th from. We're going to talk about crime and the violence in the city. A high of 89 today, 60% chance for heavy rain. It's power outages yesterday in Metairie and Algiers as a result of that storm that blew through last night. Seems like there's a storm of crime blowing through the area. We all know what happened yesterday uptown. Two shootings overnight in Metairie. Peter Scharf joins us, a friend, adjunct professor of LSU Health, New Orleans School of Public Health, a criminologist. And if you all have any questions for Peter at 260-1870 about crime, about possible fixes, he's more than welcome to take your calls. Again, 260-1870. Peter Scharf, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Good to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you, sir. Do you know, let me put it this way. Did anything that happened yesterday surprise you at all? Or if things like that continue to happen, are they going to surprise you?
Well, in some ways, yes. In some ways, no. One, pharmacies are magnets for this kind of thing. I'm working on a case now of another pharmacy that was the subject to a robbery and kidnapping. And the, you know, it's the available drugs, cash, those kind of things. Early morning, you know, is a risk time, too. You know, so in that, but in that neighborhood is unbelievably quiet. That is, in a way, shocking that we have equal opportunity crime all through the city. The other issue, the police use of deadly force is relatively rare. About one out of 67,000 police confrontation or encounters with a citizen result in a use of force, and a subset of that, that deadly force. Thank God nobody, as the superintendent said, was seriously hurt or killed. But this is a risk event. You know, put it in perspective. In the last 9 years, we've executed one person who volunteered to be executed since 2010. This year, you know, the law enforcement officers' use of deadly force has ended the lives of three individuals. So these police officers have an incredible burden on them. Judges can take forever to decide whether to execute somebody. Police officers to decide in a few seconds how to respond to a situation like this. So it's shocking and not.
Are criminals becoming more brazen when it comes to shooting at police officers? And I think there has been no doubt. The one yesterday, I know they said the video will be released, the body cam footage will be released in about 10 days or within 10 days. Is there any indication that more people are shooting at more police officers?
Well, the research on this is, I've done quite a bit of research over the last 40 years on this topic. And if the model, the data model we have suggests a transactional model. If the police think the criminals will shoot them, they'll shoot early. If the criminals think the police will shoot them, they'll shoot. So it's the mutual expectation of fear on both the offender's part or the subject's part and the police officer. So the uses of force feed on themselves and create an anticipation of danger in which both the citizen and the police officer will react. And the art form that chiefs are used around the country is sort of how do you reduce that expectation of fear. These police shootings are a disaster. You know, like what did Woody Hayes say? You know, when you throw a forward pass, there are three things can happen. They're all bad. Police shootings are the same way. A Democratic candidate, Buttigieg, in South Bend, Indiana, ended his campaign, or temporarily suspended this campaign because of police shooting. Look what happened in Baton Rouge. Look what happened in Sacramento. You can use of deadly force also contribute to civil disorder. Of the 132 riots in the 60s and 70s, roughly 90 were caused by a perceived police use of force. So,
I just heard something I'm not really crazy about. We're going to pick it up here. We come back. Peter Scharf is our guest. To me, what I heard, and maybe I'm wrong here, is that when the police get involved in a shooting, it causes community disturbance, and therefore the police should not have shot. But then I think you got something on the perp side there too, right, Peter? I mean, they bear no responsibility.
No. It's not. No, from the police source's point of view, better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Yeah.
The goal of a police officer is to go home at night. That's absolutely true. But the community risks of a use of force. Look what happened in Minnesota and Baton Rouge.
But it's
all over the country.
We'll pick it up here. We come back, Peter. What you're telling me is then you're caving into mob mentality, because if people are going to go bat guano crazy and tear up their own neighborhoods because an officer was involved in a shooting, well then, to me, if I was the officer, I would say, you know what? I'm not shooting anybody. Do whatever you want. Kill whoever you want. I'll show up and write the report. But that's it. If I'm going to be blamed for community unrest, if in fact I have to shoot a perp because my life's in danger. We'll pick it up here. We come back. Y'all have any questions or comments, 260-1870. You can text them to 870-870-620. Time for traffic, WWL. 624, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Tuesday morning. And if you go to our website at WWL.com, one of the headlines you'll see is Trump campaign fires pollsters after mixed messaging. More on that with the news in about 5 minutes or so. Peter Scharf, our guest, New Orleans criminologist, adjunct professor at LSU Health, New Orleans School of Public Health. So, Peter, before we went to break, when you're talking about community violence as a result of police shootings, you're not suggesting that the police should worry about that or even take that into consideration when they decide to shoot or don't shoot, do you? Or is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. The police officer obviously has an absolute duty, has the right to use deadly force in very restricted circumstances. But from a policy point of view, this is why you have the independent police monitor, you have the PIB, you have federal government scrutinizing any use of force, because of the justified concern that an abuse of force. And police have been, all the shootings so far that I've seen the last couple of years have been justified, clearly justified. But to maintain public trust in the police and to reduce the risk of civil disorders as a result of deadly force. I'm not making this up. It's all over the country right now.
No, I know that, but
we got to be very. You got to train these officers. You got to scrutinize these shootings. You got to assure accountability on the part of police, to avoid that eventuality, which is very real. The police officer on the street, you're right. That's a different issue. That they, but again, you've got to rely on training and tactics to reduce the chance of an abuse of force to an absolute zero.
But now it seems like whenever a police officer shoots somebody, there is automatically, as you phrased it, civil unrest. And, that's wrong. It's illegal. You can't go out and riot and burn buildings and break windows and that kind of thing. So you can't. I hope you're not saying that you're justifying this type of behavior and that, in a way, the police department brought it upon themselves by using deadly force. That's what I'm hearing. Am I wrong?
Well, I think the issue is more you have to be sure that there is a constitutional standard for the use of force, Graham versus Connors, that it's reasonable in the totality of circumstances. We can only use deadly force now when a police officer, another person's life is in danger, essentially. So, and to make sure that standard is maintained, to have the best training, the best tactics, and the best review of shootings is an absolute imperative. I gave Sean Ferguson my book. I hope he's read it. And Batch in the Bullet, it's called. And this has been the wisdom of the field, is train, and review to make sure that that those perceptions by the community are kept to the lowest level possible.
But again, Peter, to drill down on this, just so I'm understanding what you're saying, in no way are you saying that it is ever justified for a community to rise up, riot, break windows, burn stores, do whatever, because that's what you're saying then is, well, that's criminal behavior, but it's acceptable because this happened.
No, I'm stating a fact. I'm not making a value judgment at all.
Okay.
You know, obviously that's wrong. It's obviously legal. You know, you look at Ferguson, you look at Los Angeles, Watts riot, you look at Detroit, and you can lose a city. I was in Newark during the riots in 1967, and you can burn down a city. And so it's a fact issue. And it's not a legacy issue. It's not something that happened a long time ago. These risks are very real. It's a warm, hot summer. And every police chief in the country, the other thing is one of the major reasons a police officer gets fired is because of a use of force, perceived as an error or illegal. So the absolute scrutiny is job one for every chief in the country. We've got a great chief in Sean Ferguson. He's very aware of this.
But and I understand, I'm not trying to be argumentative here, Peter, but I understand those are the facts, and I get it. But at some point, either the community leaders or someone else has to make sure that the remedy is pursued through the legal system and not through lawlessness and violence, or at least the police have to make sure that once that happens. In other words, I don't know how you can blame, I understand statistically it happens and it's a fact, but you can't blame the police for this, for shooting, and I understand what you're saying, the cause and effect, but ultimately the blame for this is with the community, right?
Well, I think it doesn't matter if the city's burned down. The key is to lay a foundation of trust, which I think that
it doesn't matter if the city's burned down. What?
No, it doesn't matter who's right or who's wrong if the city's burned down or if you have a major disruption in the city.
We'll pick it up right here, Peter. We got to go to news because I'm no criminologist, but I think it absolutely matters who's responsible for the city being burned down. 6:30, more when we come back. If you have any news or any questions or comments, 260-1870. You can text them to 87870. Time now, WWL First News. And for that, we'll go to David Blake. All right, David Blake, 6:38 minutes away from more with Dr. Peter Scharf, a criminologist, as we talk about crime in the city. Quick note, though, have you downloaded the radio.com app? If you love WWL, you got to do it. You can listen to us anytime, anywhere, and you can get your favorite shows on demand. All those big stories that matter to you. Some great videos, interesting blogs, and more. And of course, we'll keep you connected to the Saints, LSU, and Pelicans. Download that radio.com app today, and don't forget to make WWL your favorite. When you click on that red heart, we show up first every time you open the app. It allows us to send push notifications so you get breaking news and alerts about special guests and hot shows, the radio.com app. It's like WWL to go, live, local, original, like New Orleans. We'll be right back. 6:44, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Four police-involved shootings so far this year. We're talking to Peter Scharf, a criminologist, adjunct professor at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. A couple of texts comes in. Peter, Dr. Scharf has the same thinking of people who are the problem. The real problem is black on black, and they are the ones that complain. Just let them shoot each other and don't let the police get involved. Another text says, Tommy, you're not trying to listen, understand. Facts are facts. If your community was lacking resources and had systematic things against them, well, then maybe you would understand. But I don't understand, Peter, and maybe, you know, you need to explain this to me like I'm in eighth grade. But how, in the course of the police doing their job, unlawful activity in the community following that, whether it's justified or not, can enter into their thinking. Am I missing something or not?
Oh, well, it's really at the strategic level. Look, you know, the individual police officer has to be trained. You know, if their life is in danger or somebody else's, they have the right to use deadly force. The reality is My research and other people's research suggests that up to in 1 in 30 times when they legally could use deadly force, do they? So there are all kinds of reasons why deadly force is not deployed. And again, strategically, at the chief level, at the mayor's level, to make sure your officers are trained. And the second part is that you built inroads into the communities, especially the Black community, so that if something happens, there's a basis of trust that will carry over, so you avoid this kind of thing. I'm not a fan of civil disorders, trust me. You know, but to avoid that eventuality, we had it as close as Baton Rouge recently, right? And you need to train, and also build a credibility with the community so that they trust the police, they trust the review process, they trust the judgment of the officers. And this is, in 2019 is a policy imperative. It's that simple. You know, and I'm not justifying riots or anything else. I mean, I've been with the police and on scene in two of them, and it's ugly. Crown Heights riot. I can look my name up, and I wrote the report on the Crown Heights riot. And these are disastrous. That was New York City. Disastrous for any community. So, and luckily, no one was killed. The shooting appears, you have to wait for the investigators to get out there. But the goal has to be sort of how do we minimize those risks of disruption? Police are doing great. One bad police shooting can disrupt a whole lot of police progress.
Let me jump in. I'm just going to finish, Peter, and then I'll jump in.
No, I love you doing this. Tommy, you're wonderful.
Are texting in. Peter and I go back, 15 years? Been a long time. I know that.
I think longer than that. And this is what professors live for, that an issue that, we worry about, the community worries about. I love what you're doing. Seriously.
All right. So let me pick it up here. Somebody texted in and talked about race and black-on-black crime. And there are a number of reasons. First of all, is that as prevalent as people think it is? Or is that just because the population here is higher as it relates to one race or the other?
Well, they're in terms of crime rates, African-American victimization in many neighborhoods is, extremely high. This is just a reality of urban life in America right now. And, again, we have to take, we don't want to go back to the notion like somebody texts it in, I'll let them kill each other. It's nonsense. So the police have a duty, even in neighborhoods with high rates of disorder, to make sure that human life and property is preserved.
And it is nonsense, Peter, because not everybody is a criminal that lives in the neighborhoods that are high crime.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And, and the police here, the other thing, you have to congratulate NOPD. We've not had a disorder here. We've not had major protests on the streets. By and large, the surveys, the UNO surveys that my friend Ed has done over at UNO, suggest a high level of trust to the police. And what I'm arguing is, that's our best bet, along with absolutely effective training, and tactics. The key to avoiding a shooting is a tactical approach, so that you have numbers on your side, you have preparation, and so make sure that these are absolute professionals in the way they approach people with guns, and in this case, possibly even automatic weapons.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. And I want to ask you, in terms of officer-involved shootings, are they on the uptick nationally, not locally, but are they on the uptick nationally? It would seem to me again, I don't think you ever have a right. You got to work through the system. You can't take to the streets and burn and riot. I don't care if you're upset over a police shooting or your team won a championship. It's wrong. You can't do it. It's against the law. So when it comes to a police-involved shooting, you have to let the legal process play out. You can have a peaceful protest, but you can't get violent and start breaking the law. But when we come back, we'll talk about national shootings. Are they up? Police officer-involved shootings? And if that's the case, are criminals more brazen? Or if they're down, are the police hesitant to do anything? 650, back in a flash, WWL. 655, Tommy Tucker spending an hour with Peter Scharf. Interesting conversation. This will be available as a podcast on WWL, talking about police-involved shootings and crime. Peter Scharf, a criminologist adjunct professor at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. Peter, I'm going to exert executive privilege here and throw my other question away and ask you one that was texted in. And that is, in terms of color, and they didn't say race, they said in terms of color, does a community react differently if it is a white officer shooting a black person, and again, this is where they're going with color, or a black person shooting a black person? In essence, is it all about the color blue and not white or black?
That's a great question. The research shows that, you know, believe it or not, and there was a guy years ago who said, police have one trigger finger for blacks and others for whites. It's nonsense. His name is Paul Tagaki. The research I've done, and there are about 17 studies, show if you compare it to violent crime rates, there's maybe a 1% differential according to race. So that, in fact, the police use deadly force when it's legally justified, when their life's threatened, and that race is not a target. Now, the issue, some of the studies show that African-American officers have higher rates of deadly force than Caucasian officers. But part of that is explained by residents, that they tend to live in areas that have higher crime risks. In terms of the public reaction, you know, Ferguson being the poster child, this can be an explosive perceptual issue. And again, you know, you're dealing with long years of perceptions and not maybe fact-based. But this is something that, you know, every chief has to think about, not how you know, defend a case or man a case or instruct police officers, but just that those perceptions are there. And a great chief, and Sean, I believe, is becoming a great chief. Our chief here is to make sure that the worst perceptions don't get acted out in the community, that, you know, we are race-free police department. We make decisions based on fact and law.
I think you totally nailed it as it relates to Sean Ferguson. I think he's up front. He's forward. He says he releases as many facts as he can at the time. Then he follows up on what it is he's going to do. Peter, thank you. I appreciate it as always.
Oh, man, this is LSU loves it. This is good stuff, Tommy.
You have a good day. Thank you. Peter Scharf, adjunct professor of LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health and a criminologist, and he and I have been talking, I guess, for 15, or as he said, more like 20 years. So we take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Michael Glasser, president of the Police Association of New Orleans, and talk about the officer-involved shootings, et cetera, and as it relates to violence as a result of a police shooting, how does that all fit in with the consent decree? I'd like to know what you think. 260-1870, our Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll asking you, do you fear being a victim of violence in the city of New Orleans? And as it stands now, about 70% of you are saying yes. I would also like to hear from you via text at 870-870, or you can call us at 260-1870. And let me know why, or where, or when. It seems like occasionally these shootings break out on pretty well-traveled highways in New Orleans and in the surrounding area. Sometimes it's at night in darkened areas. Is it primarily in the daylight that you feel safe in the city, or at night maybe you don't? Or is it just life in America today, and if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, it can happen? We'll be back. Tommy Tucker, WWL.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.